not to date you, but decades of experience.
If you can't tell, I'm the resident old guy on the team.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of The Download. I am joined by our esteemed partner, CIO, friend, mentor, Eric McVeigh. Eric, welcome.
McVeigh.
Hello.
In the building.
In the building.
Eric. All right. Thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, good to get out for a change. I've stared at the same four walls and same yard for, what, a year now. So it's
quite
good to get out a little bit.
Great to have you. I'm Jake Sherrill, founder and chairman of Tier 4 Advisors. I'm joined by Joel Anderson, VP of Marketing. Joel, say hi.
Hello, hello.
And Eric McVeigh, please feel free to introduce yourself to our crowd around the world.
Yeah, if you can't tell, I'm the resident old guy on the team. 34 plus years doing something involved with IT for, you know, little companies such as NCR, McKesson, Verizon, and Home Depot. Anywhere from data center ops to enterprise architecture to data center design, data center consolidation. I've been around since dirt, so we've seen it all through the years. But my favorite thing is, and the one thing that we do well, I think, here at Tier 4 is help IT leaders find operational expense savings. And we've done it so many times now, I get really jazzed about it. I graduated with a major in administration and business administration from Kennesaw, but a minor in finance. So every time I find these cost savings, I get really jazzed. So.
And the fact that you've sat on the side of the table as the client for many years, you understand where they're coming from. You understand some of their challenges, not only with maybe budget, but also the time in the day, headcount, finding the talent, retaining the talent, making sure the business is pleased with all the other things that IT is delivering. It really brings a great perspective, not only because you have the Tier 4 database of all the 700 plus vendors, all the notes and all the quotes from the 8+ years that we've been in business, but also the, not to date you, but decades of experience working for some of those smaller companies, as we jokingly say, like McKesson, NCR, Home Depot, Verizon. Well, that's some good stuff. I appreciate that background. As you can tell, viewing this, we have a lot of seasoned veterans that can add a lot of value to your next IT project. With that said, Tier 4 Advisors is designed to simplify and expedite your procurement when it comes to five key areas. The five red boxes you see on the screen in front of you: data center, telecom, managed services, security compliance, and emerging tech. If you have a project in one of these five areas, you should call Tier 4 Advisors. You have the access to somebody like Eric and, frankly, a team of a couple dozen other folks with similar resumes, and help you shrink timelines and do the project correctly the first time. So reach out to Tier 4 Advisors at tier4advisors.com, and me, Eric, and our team will gladly get engaged with you when we can. With that, let's talk about the best thing we saw all week. Joel, we'll go ahead and start with you.
Well, the best thing I saw all this week was the torch, the Olympic torch, being doing its nationwide tour around Japan for the Olympics that are going to be featured this year in Japan. So I think that there needs to be like an average Joe or Jane athlete that needs to compete in every single category just to like witness the greatness of these athletes that have spent their entire lives dedicated to a specific craft, just so like for a frame of reference, because here we are sitting at home on the couch with like our Pringles chips, like munching, like watching these athletes do incredible things. I don't think we appreciate the greatness that these athletes have in front of us. So I think there needs to be some sort of an amendment added to the Olympics where like an average Joe or Jane competes in each one of the segments, just to give the average person a better understanding of how incredible these athletes are.
Eric, best thing you saw all week?
Well, I've actually got the worst thing I've seen all week, and then the best thing as well. March the 25th, that we kind of all came through luckily here, but not so much out in Noonan, Georgia. I mean, the devastation that I saw from a video perspective, it's like people worked their whole lives to build up material things, and it's gone just like that. But then the best thing I saw was the videos of companies and neighbors and the community pulling together to those that, you know, like I say, those that have, helping those that have not. And I thought that was just a great sense of community, a sense of relationship between neighbors, and a helpful attitude. And boy, I'd love to, you know, I'd love to see more of that, but not necessarily because of a tornado, you know, throughout the world. So I thought that was the best thing that I had seen.
You know, with some of those events, you see people coming together and, you know, offering their home, offering services, offering their time. To your point, it's great to see.
Yep.
My favorite thing all week, the ship is free, right? Suez Canal, Ever Given. It's been the top of every news cycle that we've seen. Yeah. Nice to see that. Goodness gracious. I don't know how long it'll affect the world economy. It'll be interesting to see, you know, the next couple weeks, next couple months, who knows. But it'll be, that's great to know that that is now done, and we can put that behind us.
Pick up toilet paper and paper towels while you can.
Yeah, no doubt.
It might be a few weeks before it comes out.
Joel, in the news, let's go ahead and talk about some hot topics.
Yeah.
Drone delivery, delivering medicines, delivering vaccines, drones getting involved in the telehealth or virtual health game. So kind of interesting what's happening there.
Telehealth is only going to become more and more mainstream. It is already more acceptable now today than it's ever been. You have HIPAA compliance issues. You have some things that stood in the way historically that are now kind of being knocked down or maybe changed a little bit within laws and compliances. You see that, you know, candidly, we're running the world economy candidly off Zoom meetings right now and Microsoft Teams meetings. Why can't we discuss things with our doctors over those same platforms?
That's correct. And it, from a layer deeper in the technology, one prohibitiveness was the connectivity pieces, right? Mm-hmm. And so now with more people kind of moving away from the traditional MPLS and doing internet connectivity, state of Georgia and other states are implementing the broadband initiatives to get the connectivity out to the rural areas. You know, I was at a TAG event not long ago, a year or so ago, well, pre-COVID, but they were talking about telemedicine in these rural areas being so needed because maybe one doctor is servicing like five counties in right. South Georgia. And so they can't see everybody. So for somebody in, you know, rural South Georgia to be able to talk to a doctor, you know, in Atlanta is huge. And still get their meds shipped to them, and so it's all good. And you know, you didn't mention it, but there was an article we saw about Google Chromebook, and you know, there obviously with 2020 they gained so much prominence in the schools because they're low end from a overhead standpoint, low cost,
right? Yeah,
but a functionality. Just like if, you know, you had a MacBook Pro.
And you to your point, if you're accessing the internet, doing a lot of things online, you don't need a whole lot in the sense of compute on your desk.
Or storage or anything.
Right. Right. Yep. Right.
Smart cities is a kind of, you know, exciting initiative for a lot of cities around the country. But there's been some hiccups there, right? So as you have sensors collecting data throughout the city infrastructure, a lot of SaaS companies are struggling with making use of that data or the city actually using that data in a positive way to help them run things operationally and smooth. There's a quote here from one of the SaaS founders that helps a city with a smart city. He says, you have the Department of Transportation that's responsible for operating and maintaining roads. You have a metropolitan planning organization that is responsible for planning new roads. You have city and county traffic engineers that are also responsible for it. And you have transit agencies that are responsible for getting people around and using the facilities. Then you have law enforcement that's responsible for securing it. And all of those organizations act independently. And so while they all share the same roads, they don't share the same data.
So we talk about transformation and what's coming and what's already come. I think aggregation is another term that is you know, right, should be used often. When you think about aggregating the data, you know, whether that's from your bank account, your email, your locations, your calendar, your social media, et cetera, from a personal standpoint, you talk about from a state, local, government, federal government type of standpoint. Again, aggregating, once a lot of these systems start to aggregate accordingly, boy, things are going to change, hopefully for the better, but things are going to change for sure.
All right. So PayPal is now accepting cryptocurrencies as a means of payment for their 29 million merchants on the PayPal platform. So you have Bitcoin, Ether, Bitcoin Cash, and Litecoin now as acceptable forms of payment.
Yeah, I don't see this going away.
No.
This is here to stay.
We've got data center partners that are accepting their invoice payments in Bitcoin.
And then Tesla announced a month or two ago that they're accepting Bitcoin for their Tesla products. Yeah. And they also admitted that they're not rolling that into cash. They're going to keep it as Bitcoin as well, as an organization. So again, not going away. Jump on that train while you can.
So Google Maps is now offering an eco-friendly route when you're getting to your destination. So you have your traditional fastest route that you can choose to pursue, or if you want to maybe spend a few more minutes, but it's going to emit less emissions, you can also choose that route, which will be coming later this year, according to Google.
Do they have a plug-in where you just press a button and you're in an electric car anyway, so you have no emissions? I guess if you're going to go on a longer route, is that actually saving emissions versus going on a shorter route because you're actually, kicking less emissions off longer term? I don't know what the answer is there. It'd be interesting to see.
I think a lot of the recent years, the conversation of emissions and eco-friendliness is coming out, and it's breeding new technology and new entrepreneurs that are trying to come up with that technology. And so I think you're going to see a lot more new things around that. I found this interesting when I was at Verizon with their connected car division called Telematics. The development cycle for new technology, new styles is in vehicles is 10 years. It takes 10 years to come up. So they've been working on this for quite a while. Yeah. That's why it's, has taken so long to get there. But it's amazing. I'm getting all geeky here for just a second, but it's an amazing, if you think about the car being a rolling computer and the amount of messages that are compiling and sending to, the mothership, so to speak.
Yeah.
Every time the battery ticks up or ticks down, it's sending a log file. And they're a little bitty, but there's a whole lot of them,
That's right.
Some other news. Tech giants are starting to reopen their offices. So you have Microsoft announcing that they're going to do a hybrid model. Facebook opening at 10% capacity right now. Same thing with Uber at 20%. Spotify, they're doing a hybrid model. Twitter and Square, they committed to allowing their workers to be full-time remote if they so choose. But organizations starting to ease up, starting to open back up at limited capacity.
I was reading something this morning talking about herd immunity, hopefully by April. We'll see. But that was an interesting item. With regards to people in their work environments, I think some people flourish at a work-from-home environment. Other people probably struggle, and they would prefer, obviously, being in the office. I think there's a lot of people that are somewhere in between as well. As an employer myself, it's my duty to give my people what they need to be successful.
Yeah, I think there's from a corporate real estate standpoint, there's some downturn, but there's also some opportunities out there for young companies that are maybe coming out of Tech Village and looking for a place to, call home. Some of these companies that have four or five floors of space and they're coming back to maybe two. This corporate real estate's got to do something with those other floors. The mortgage is still coming. So it's a win-lose kind of situation. But I think it's great opportunity for a lot of companies that don't have a home.
And candidly, that's money to the bottom line that a lot of these CFOs and CEOs are going to be looking at as well. Where, what is the trade-off? What type of diligence do we have from our employees in their work effort? Mm-hmm. If it's, comparable or better working from home, stay there and put money to the bottom line instead of paying some of these, in some cases, outrageously high-priced rents. Yeah, yeah. Downtown San Francisco, New York City, yeah. Et cetera, et cetera.
Yep. You know, that kind of, talking about that, just a real-world example, I've got a client up north in Ohio that we worked with last couple years. Basically, they were one of those situations. They had their data center on-prem and an on-prem phone system, and then had other systems off with one of our good partners and paying, you know, really way too much. A lot of construction going on, power outages, cut internet, what have you, paying a lot for an MPLS. And so we kind of helped them, and it's even more so now. The impetus is to get this phone system working so they can enable their workforce to do that 20% back in the office. And they'll shrink their footprint, you know, shrink their internet or their MPLS costs, shrink their internet costs. All the while, they've improved and basically got out of the data center business. And we're finding more and more, having more and more conversations with CIOs that you know, they're tired of worrying about writing a big check every 3 years.
To
buy new gear, yeah. 3 to 5 years, right? And keep up with the latest and greatest technology. And that's, you know, that's kind of what we do all day, every day.
All day. When did that shift take place from thinking I am more secure on-prem owning my own gear? To now, I think the majority of folks would reference the fact that they're more secure in the cloud, partnering with someone who does it all day, every day. Yeah. And in some cases, instead of having 3 or 5 or even 30 employees on your team internally that are doing it, you know, finding a partner that's got 2,500 employees or 10,000 plus employees for some of these larger partners, again, do it all day, every day.
I think you saw the shift. At least for me, I think you saw the shift when the security space became prominent. Right. In other words, the first hackers came in. The first time they got ransomware, the first time they got breached, they're thinking, gosh, I got all this stuff on-prem, and I've got 4 people to run it. They don't have time to look at all the security logs that are coming through, maintain all this gear, negotiate with vendor partners for new gear or anything like that. And I think that shift started really right about the time that the ransomware and the breaches and all that stuff started, what, 5 years ago, yeah. 7 years ago?
Yeah, probably.
The big shift started then.
And I've mentioned this on some other podcasts, but, you know, there was a time and place where people would use the words never and cloud in the same sentence. Right. Now the term is almost kind of, if you can't beat them, join them. Yep. And what I mean by that is, you know, the larger enterprises, economically speaking, it didn't make a whole lot of sense 8-10 years ago. Also, security compliance wise was a concern. Now that has completely shifted, almost a complete 180. Mm-hmm. The SMB market, and when I say SMB, I'm talking, you know, 30 to 500 employee type companies. Historically, they felt, again, kind of server hugger-ish, where mm-hmm. they wanted to keep that, you know, those toys
always done it.
In their sandbox. Yeah. But they're realizing, again, they have a lot more talent with a vendor partner who has, you know, again, 100 or 1,000 plus engineers on their side. In the sense, they're agnostic because they're technology agnostic, but they might be pushing a little bit of an agenda from what it is they're trying to sell.
Yeah, you see not only a shift in companies and their thinking in that space, but also in the personnel. Mm-hmm. So it's become more economical to pay somebody to do the level one, level two blocking and tackling, watching the blinky lights, replacing a hard drive or what have you, than sending somebody downtown Atlanta or to Nashville or wherever to go drop another drive in a system that's down. And so what is the sysadmin doing now? They're working more closely with the business. Sure. To help develop, not necessarily develop, but architect the right revenue-generating applications, and then supporting that with the technology underneath. And it's all about SLAs now, right? Yeah. You go in your home, you flip on a light switch, you expect it to work. Because if you think about your average sysadmin FTE making X amount a year and you've got 10 of them, and two of them leave, or two of them, God forbid, you know, life happens and they have flat tires, bad engine block.
They're sick, whatever.
Sick. The business still got to run, but it's running on three people. When you buy that utility model, you're not only do you not care what gear you're on, you just expect it to give you this many IOPS and run 24/7, 100% uptime. And if it's not 100%, you've got a N plus one configuration where it fails over and you're still running and still making money. You're shipping product and invoicing clients. So we're seeing a shift in that. So what are those 10 people, what are they becoming? They're becoming, really, to your point, service managers in a sense, and working with the business to build out that, you know, that better application that runs on the gear, you know, 24/7 and is revenue generating for the company itself.
And or even some of those folks might be, you know, vendor managers in the sense of technical vendor managers, right? But kind of that liaison between the business and IT and the vendor itself. Yep. So making sure that they're communicating that accordingly, almost project management in a way, mm-hmm. rather than them getting the 2:30 a.m. on Christmas morning phone call yep. that, you know, everybody's
just down. Everybody all lands on deck.
You've been there?
I've been there way more times than I count. There was one place I was at, I was literally up for 36 hours straight. When
on a holiday weekend?
I was during the middle of the week, and that it was the week that NMDA virus came through. NMDA spelled backwards is admin, so it was a play on that. So it was sweeping across the company.
All right. Should we spin the wheel?
Let's spin the wheel.
All right. Eric, as our guest, if you would, go ahead and spin that wheel for us.
Well, all right.
See what question we're going to ask.
Up or down, or does it matter?
Either way.
Let fate decide our final question.
Okay.
Always fun.
Number two.
All right. What was your least favorite subject in school? Joel, we're going to start with you.
The math subject wasn't my favorite, but then got angry and was like, well, I'm going to get good at this. And so became good at it. But as a kid growing up, math was not my favorite subject.
Eric, what was your least favorite subject in school?
Beyond a doubt, chemistry.
Oh, okay.
So that whole periodic table thing you had to memorize and kind of it never clicked. So I ended up staring at it. This is how I passed. I stared at it and memorized where everything was. And then, you know, I could repeat that on the test and barely squeaked by. When I was growing up, you were talking about playing ball. When I was growing up, for me to play ball, my folks said, you have to make honor roll every quarter.
Wow. Mine was English for various reasons, but a lot of reading and writing and things like that, that candidly, I just wanted to be outside playing with my friends. Similar to Joel, though, is one of those things I just worked extra hard on. So I'm not necessarily perfect in my English, but it turned into being something that kind of motivated me nonetheless. So
we have four VIP events coming up, two happening locally here in Atlanta, another happening in Dallas, and then also in Nashville. So we have a golf outing happening, so we have a clay shooting event happening at Etowah Valley on May 7th, and then here locally on May 26th at Atlanta National Golf Club for IT executives and business leaders in the greater Atlanta area. We'd love to have you join us for those. And then Dallas, we have May 28th, a friendly golf scramble happening there. And same in Nashville, a friendly golf scramble at Gaylord Springs on June 11th. So visit tier4advisors.com/events to register for an upcoming VIP event near you.
Thanks for joining us. In the meantime, visit tier4advisors.com to learn more, and we'll see you next time on The Download. Eric, thanks so much.
Yes, sir.
Hey-o.
Take care.
Take care.